Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The end of March, we have to make payments to local governments and for Medicaid. We are $2 billion short, and nobody knows where we're going to come up with the money.
Yikes, Governor Patterson, yikes. So if you need someone to do the heavy lifting in New York, who are you going to call? Richard Ravitch. In the 1960s, President Lyndon Johnson appointed Ravitch to the Commission on Urban Problems. In the 70s and 80s, Governor Carey tapped Ravitch to help rescue the Urban Development Corporation and then the MTA from the legacy of the New York fiscal crisis. In the 90s, Mayor Giuliani wanted him for schools chancellor, but it didn't work out. In the O's, he led the commission to study MTA financial reform and got drafted to be David Patterson's lieutenant governor after Elliot Spitzer resigned from office. And now, in the 2010s, Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch is taking a stab at long-term fiscal reform once again to bail the state out from the latter-day financial mess. Richard Ravitch joins me now. Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to WNYC.
I'm glad to be here. It's been a while.
Are you having deja vu these days? Like, didn't we already do a fiscal crisis fix in your lifetime?
Yeah, but they're all very different, and there isn't time to look backwards.
The state budget deficit is at least $9 billion for the coming fiscal year, even more in fiscal 2012. You say that's too big to cut all at once, so you're proposing borrowing $2 billion a year for the next 5 years to ease a transition to smaller government, or at least allow that borrowing. Explain the rationale behind the borrowing, because your critics say borrowing is what got the state into this mess.
Well, I'm glad to, but that is not the most important part of my recommendations. But let me answer your question as best I can. There is an enormous propensity on the part of many people in the legislature to borrow their way out of this problem. One of the reasons I suggested it was because I suggested a limit. And second of all, because the state has indeed gotten into the trouble it's done because it's gone through a lot of backdoor borrowing. And my guess is that there are a lot of suggestions coming out of the legislature to do more backroom borrowing. So what I have suggested is have a limited amount in order to enable us to get to structural balance over a five-year period. Because it isn't just this year's deficit. As you correctly point out, next year's deficit is higher. And in fact, any reasonable projection would show that we're over the next 5 years, the state has a structural imbalance of about $60 billion. So a lot of things are going to have to change. Now, some people want revenue enhancements, and other people want the problem handled all with cuts. I am very careful to not take a position on that issue for the simple reason that I'm not elected, and those decisions, which are painful decisions for people who run for office to make, but they're going to have to make them. They can't duck them anymore by doing a lot of backdoor borrowing. But the main thrust of what I'm recommending is very simple, is a system of discipline which will ensure that the state slowly gets their budget balanced again so it has some ability to invest in its future.
What's the key to that discipline?
The existence of a financial review board, which would have the power to do no more. It's not a control board. It would simply have the power and the obligation to certify every quarter whether the budget was in balance or not. And if it was not in balance, the state couldn't borrow at all. And any initial borrowing would contain a covenant which would say the bonds would be in default if the Financial Review Board finds that the budget's not in balance. And that is something that the political system couldn't tolerate under any circumstances. That is, they couldn't tolerate not having access to the marketplace to be able to borrow money. So that's the discipline in the process. I've also recommended that we go to gap accounting or gap budgeting, which is what we did with the city in 1975, and within 3 years, the city had a budget process that made sense and was explicable and understandable to the public. And I've recommended that we go to a June 30th fiscal year instead of an April 1st fiscal year. 46 states have June 30th years, and one should wait until after you see what you're collecting on April 15th in the way of tax revenues, and you see what the estimated tax revenues are for the subsequent year. Gives you a much sounder basis for projecting spending once you know what you're going to be taking in.
Listeners, we can take a few phone calls for Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. On that June 30th fiscal year, instead of April 1st or July 1st instead of April 1st, does that hurt the city of New York at all? Because I've heard lawmakers from the city over the years say the city's fiscal year starts on July 1st precisely so that they can see what they get from the state on April 1st and then know how to budget for the city. If both the city and the state are crashing toward their new budgets on the same date, how can the city actually get that done?
Well, frankly, you know, we've discussed this with the city's budget director, who's an extraordinarily able person. It's not impossible. The two are inextricably intertwined. No budget decisions at the state are really made without enormous input from the city. Sure, the city has a statutory obligation to have a budget, a balanced budget approved by June 30th. And I would think coordinating the two actually helps both the city and the state.
Long term, do you see state revenues returning to where they were before the current recession, or is that an era now lost to history and to getting fooled by Wall Street bubbles?
I happen to agree with you implicitly that it's going to be a long time before inflation enables those revenues to catch up. First of all, historically, states always lag the national economy by a few years. And you're quite right, it was the credit bubble of the last 10 or 15 years that sort of masked a long-term decline in our economy. And if you looked at a simple chart that showed the growth of state expenditures, particularly Medicaid, put next to it a line that showed what the growth in revenues were, you could see that every year in the foreseeable future, that gap widens and widens and widens.
We always hear that New York spends more on Medicaid and gets less than California or other states. Do you agree with that? Do we need substantial Medicaid reform in terms of what comes in and what goes out?
Well, there is, frankly, some mythology. Some people say that New York is more generous than another state, that we have more programs that create eligibility for people. That is actually not true. We're about midway in terms of the number of programs that we offer under Medicaid that we're not required to by federal law. But we have to manage the Medicaid program far more vigorously. We must slow down the growth. The real danger here is that Medicaid spending is squeezing out education and infrastructure spending. And that is, as I have said often, sort of eating one's seed corn. You know, there are a lot of states already that have cut school weeks to 4 days, and I can't imagine any more effective way than mortgaging one's future is to reduce education for our youngsters. So Medicaid growth has got to be contained. Healthcare costs have got to be contained. Healthcare costs are going up 6 times the rate of inflation. And I'm hoping very much that the legislation that's ultimately enacted in Washington will not only help more people become eligible for Medicaid and health care, but we'll also begin to address the question of costs. And that is critically important, not just for the states, but for the federal government itself. Otherwise, Medicare and Medicaid are going to create at the federal level the same problem we have at the state level. As a matter of fact, there's a headline in one of the newspapers this morning that suggests that Moody's says that the United States might lose its AAA credit rating. That's pretty scary.
New York State Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch, my guest on WNYC. Valerie in Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. You know what? I wanted to ask, why is it that we're focusing in on borrowing money to take ourselves out of this hole instead of looking at why we're overspending? For example, paying, let's say, $10 million for a job that would only cost us $200,000. Why is it that we still have sealed bids in New York and we keep getting gouged from these contractors? Why is no one looking at this overspending?
Lieutenant Governor?
First of all, that's a good question. And the answer in part is that when you cut, we have between a $9 and $10 billion deficit for this forthcoming year. And since over half of the state budget is state aid to education and to health care, when you start cutting at that dimension, there's a lot of waste that can be cut out. There are a lot of programs that aren't necessary, but you also inevitably hurt a lot of people. And people don't have full notice of the severity of the cuts that are forthcoming. And that's why a short-term borrowing helps you stretch this out over a period of time. It's the only beneficiary. The cuts have to come. The only question is, can you do it over a period of time that minimizes the pain that people feel?
So short-term
borrowing is a way of easing that. Let me point out to this very sophisticated question. In 1975, when the city was almost broke, the first thing we did was create MAC, and we borrowed in order to give us a period of 3 or 4 years before we could put the city in budget balance. After the tragedy of 9/11, the city borrowed over $1.5 billion with the full support of the state legislature in order to help deal with that crisis. We are in a mammoth, serious fiscal crisis. We are in a meltdown. What we have been doing at the state level for the last 10 years is not sustainable.
By contrast, Lieutenant Governor Ravitch, in New Jersey, Governor Christie gives his major budget speech today. New Jersey's problems are even worse on a percentage basis, with an $11 billion deficit on a $33 billion budget. I mean, that's crazy. A third of the budget unaccounted for. But his plan, at least as reported in the press so far, is pretty much to cut their way out all at once. And I don't see any borrowing to restructure there, at least in these pre-speech press accounts. Do you have a thought on the contrast with New Jersey or why New York can't or shouldn't do that?
I'm not familiar with the New York problem, with the New Jersey numbers per se. I do know two things. That Governor Corzine spent many years trying to reduce expenditures and was frequently rebuffed by the legislature. Number two, I know that the governor of New Jersey has emergency powers under their constitution that the governor of New York doesn't have. Third of all, as I said, we have over 5 years a $60 billion problem. And to do some short-term borrowing is exactly what we did to give the city time to get its budget balanced, and it's exactly what we did to help the city after 9/11. So it's a very small piece of what I'm recommending.
It's $2 billion max out of the current $9 billion budget, and you're also proposing these other structural reforms. We hear you.
That's what's critical, yes.
Jim in Hackensack, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jim.
Yes, hi. You know, I wanted to question some of the basic assumptions that the Lieutenant Governor is using, and I want to raise the issue of where is the financial sector in all this across the country, and, you know, how are they being controlled or taxed, And, you know, how is their responsibility being re-looked at? Because we're just trying to do this through austerity when this problem across the country is something similar that Roosevelt faced. And his notion was we were either going to let finance control the government for the benefit of a few, or have the government control finance for the benefit of the many. And finance is responsible for the growth. And if they've misfunctioned in that way, so we don't have enough growth to handle the needs of the people, then we need to deal with them. And that seems to be completely missing from all of your efforts. And so I wonder what your response is.
Sure. First of all, the regulation of the financial industry is critically important. That is not a state function. That's a federal function. And Paul Volcker has made very, very sound recommendations. And the administration has a bill before Congress, or will shortly have a bill, that will put some real discipline into the conduct of the financial affairs of our major banks. That is not something the state could do anything about.
Well, I think Jim's talking about something different than regulating to prevent future crashes. I think he's talking about some kind of clawback. If Wall Street is now profitable again and we see all this new bullishness on Wall Street, I mean, just watch CNBC for a few minutes, Lieutenant Governor, this afternoon, and you'll see that cockiness is creeping back in. And, of course, they had record profits last year on the street. Should there be some clawback, some kind of tax or something for the financial industry to help provide New York State with the shortfall that it helped to cause?
The answer is we collect an incredibly high percentage of our total revenue in the state of New York from the financial services industry. 0.1% of the population pays 30% of the taxes. One always has to measure very carefully the amount of taxes you charge versus the mobility that the financial services industry has. If you tax them disproportionately, there are fewer and fewer reasons why they have to remain in New York. And that is an essential part of our economy. And nobody can be 100% sure whether you've reached that optimal balance between maximizing your revenues and preserving the important economic base for our city. And that's something the legislature of the state conjures with all the time. I think, given the figures, had we not collected billions of dollars from Wall Street in the last 6 weeks or so, we wouldn't have been able to afford to make the school aid payments that have to be made. We wouldn't have had the cash. So, you know, it's another important thing to point out for those few of you who remember back in 75, but in those days, the banks were far less mobile than they are today. They owned the premises which they occupy. They owned the securities that they had underwritten. Today, with the changes in technology and the fact that most financial transactions are electronic in nature, punitive tax levels are not going to solve our problem. They're going to worsen it.
One other thing about taxes, though, on the tax cut side, and again from New Jersey, Governor Christie is also reportedly proposing today a constitutional cap on property tax increases at 2.5% a year. Did you consider anything like that to propose for New York, since property taxes are such an issue in the New York City suburbs as well?
Well, they're a very significant issue, particularly upstate, where the 10 upstate counties probably pay a higher real estate tax measured as a percentage of the market value of their homes than almost anybody in the United States of America. But I'll tell you something, we don't have time for constitutional change. We've got to address the problem now with the tools that are available to us now. And obviously one of the great virtues of restoring a sensible structural balance to New York State's budget is that you stem the growth rate and therefore give local governments more capacity to deal with their own financing problems without the kinds of property taxes in increases that they've had to engage in the last 10 years.
So last question. With your long view, did New York fail to learn the lessons of the 1970s?
You know, there are enough differences with the city's crisis. And the city crisis in 75 was primarily a financing crisis and a lack of discipline in their budgeting and in their accounting systems. This is a problem that afflicts the country. There are two parts to the problem. One is that the inflation and the cost of health care, Social Security, are creating an inflation or an increase in the federal budget that's staggering. We moved from a $400 billion surplus at the federal level in 2001 to a $1.6 trillion deficit in 2010. And so we suffered from the same thing. And I have to tell you, in my judgment, everybody was at fault. Nobody sounded the alarm bell adequately to get the political system to pay attention to it. So, yes, New York suffered from the same spending addiction that we did at a federal level. And now it's very painful and very difficult to slow that down or reverse it.
New York State Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up later, we will look more closely at the New Jersey cuts being proposed today by Governor Christie. We'll also put this into national perspective because, yeah, you can argue that we're the worst states in the country when it comes to budgeting, but this is going on all over America. We'll also hear about a new nationwide student movement to resist higher education cuts, all coming up. But coming up next, we'll keep following the health reform endgame in Congress and name more names of local Democrats who might vote no. Stay with us.